Interface. Not the same questions, not the same answers.
Hi, this is Chris Holowaty filling in for Brad Johnson here on the Interface Radio Show. This is an examination of Christian perspectives on thought, faith, and culture with Adam Mayers, the founder of the Stoa Foundation and the pastor of Disciples Church. And we're here today at Tawana Bullwhip Studio, and our guests are Paul Sullivan, who has been with us on a previous show. Paul is finishing up his doctoral work in the area of clinical psychology. We also have Eric Chandler, who's an ordained minister and a full-time student at Fuller Theological Seminary. And we're going to continue a discussion we started on the topic of divorce. And today we want to primarily focus on some of the more practical aspects of divorce. One being, how is the church to respond to the issue of divorce? And we'd also like to take a look at what are some practical things and some important things that need to be considered going into marriage, and what are some things to look out for in a marriage, to look out for within yourself and just within a church body as far as how to counsel and how to deal with people who are married and struggling.
We were looking at some of the aspects involved in divorce. Covenant, the violation of that covenant, when is covenant actually destroyed? What are some of the issues with Jesus's statements about adultery taking place in the mind and in the intention? And how do we negotiate the tension between Jesus's words, which have a grammatical value that can be negotiated legally, and his own intention, which focuses on intention itself? Trying to assess then, how does the church react with the issue of divorce? How does the church then interact with some statements in the Pauline literature about leaders having only one partner in life, and how that reflects with Jesus's statements that the mind can flit from partner to partner, the heart can flit from as well murder to murder, and these sorts of heavy injunctions about where our hearts are versus where the legality of formal behavior stands. And so just want to kind of throw that out to the folks here in the studio. What kinds of experiences have you seen in the church, and how do you frame this issue of divorce?
In the counseling work that I have done, and more so in the research that I have begun to pore over, both for my dissertation and just my classwork, I've realized that this is no small issue, that divorce and the hurt that we begin to see in the churches surrounding this issue it's widespread among the congregation and as well among pastors. This is not something that just takes place among a congregation and the pastors remain above it, that this is really a matter of hurt that spreads beyond those boundaries. And I think we need to look at it beyond the legal issues and begin to take a look at the heart issues behind it and the hurt. And as a counselor, one of the things that burdens my heart is we begin to move past this and begin to deal with the hurt and the healing process. And that is a direction that I would hope that we take this conversation. Is yes, there is a definition that we're looking at along the boundaries of what is and what isn't. But more importantly, I believe, is the heart. And the hurt that as a church we need to look at how we can handle this.
I think you're right, Paul, in the sense that at some point, once that decision's been made about divorce, that there's definite fallout and there's definite periods of time for healing. And it's not something that when those papers are signed that it's just, okay, I'm off and I'm free and now I can get on with my life. There's a lot of baggage that goes along with that. I just want to share just my own experience. I have been divorced, and it was a very interesting time in my life, coming from a very conservative background and knowing that kind of viewpoint on divorce, so conservative that I had not known personally a divorced person until I was in college. Now, maybe there were some that were divorced, that were remarried, that just never was talked about. But that's the kind of background that I came from. So I already had just kind of a framework for divorce as just being, don't ever let that happen to you, you know, that kind of deal. So for me, I instantly expected classification. Like, I instantly expected, like, oh man, I'm going to be in the divorced singles group now for sure. And I just expected that. at the time I was at a church that I wasn't quite sure how they would treat that. So it was, you know, both the issue of validation and just being divorced and just the taboo that comes along with that, and caught me spinning in a way. But I want to share just my heart about this. I don't want to speak outside myself and try to analyze what has happened, but just try to recap for you, like, my heart during that time. I was served papers on arrival back from a trade show, and a friend of mine was supposed to pick me up at the airport. That didn't happen, and I had to call my wife at the time saying, hey, can you come pick me up? On the way home in the car, bam, got the papers right there. It's the longest, weirdest drive I've ever had in my entire life. Not knowing what to say, angry, bitter, like, great, this is the outcome. So this is where it's headed. This is what has happened. We got home and separate rooms. That had been happening for a little while anyway. Just the whole issue of heart and intent had already taken place. And this is just kind of like protocol. You know, this is, all right, here's what the law says we have to do about this in order to make this feeling transpire, you know. I called Adam that next morning, and this was a Saturday night. I call Adam on Sunday morning, I believe it was, and I tell him what has happened. We had spent some time prior to this, so he was aware of the situation, but it caught us both by surprise that it came down. I called him on a Sunday morning, and this is how I was treated from a pastor at my church. Adam says to me, I will be there. And sure enough, I don't remember time frames, but I remember him showing up, us going to a Coco's, and sitting there through breakfast, through lunch, and into the afternoon. All right, this is a man who had responsibilities that morning. Sunday morning, pastor, you know, they only work one day a week anyway, so, and we all know that's a joke. Had responsibilities of leading worship and pastoring a group of people. And instead, he made a conscious, intentional decision to come and sit with someone who was broken and who was hurt and who wasn't quite sure where to go. I mean, this is the treatment that I received. Now, way different framework than what I was brought up in. Way different. I don't know why I chose to do that. I don't know, but at that point for me, in retrospect now, that was the beginning point of my healing. The treatment that I received from the church. Not my dad, not my parents, not my coworkers, not any of those things. That wasn't the beginning point for me. It was the outstretched hand of someone who said, I will put aside these things to come and care for you. And that was the beginning of that healing process. Since that time, I'm now remarried, which is, I find it God's gift and one that was presented to me in a way that I just couldn't say no. Did I deserve it? No. Was I worth it? No. Was I divorced? Yes. Did it look good? No. You know, all the no's. But yet, God met me in a way that said, this is my gift to you. And you know, when somebody brings you over a present, you don't go, I'll open that later. I'll take care of that some other time. You honor them by saying thank you and taking that gift in that way. I had friends who cared for me, who cried with me, who allowed me to talk and just to share and to talk about what had happened to me, which was a process for me just of trying to sort out the story. I felt like the church treated me in this way. They noticed or saw my intention of attempting to hold to the covenant and the vow that I made when I was first married. And that always calls up for me all kinds of questions, like, when you have a covenant, is there a way that you can fulfill your end of it even though that other party is not fulfilling their end of it? And I think of Old Testament when God talks about Israel and says, oh, you do this and you do that, and you go and you do your own thing, and then you come back to me and you say, oh, here I am, you know. And God's been consistent all that time, and we've been off doing our little deal. Does that hold true in a relationship today? Is there a way that even though our spouse or our partner is doing something that they shouldn't do, that we can hold to our end of the bargain, our end of that covenant, and be honoring to God in that? Which I think for me is, in retrospect, is the part that I had to work hardest at. it'd been very easy for me to go, you so-and-so and so-and-so, and place all the blame and place all the responsibility and place all that effort on that other party and say it was your fault, your fault, your fault, your fault. When in covenant takes two, there's two parties involved there. So for me, my church helped me and allowed me and cared for me in fulfilling my part of that covenant in that way. It wasn't a judgmental time. And I can't say that for all churches. I've seen the treatment of people that are divorced, both who are pastors and who are lay people and who are just general congregation of the church. So for me, being on the other end of that, now as an ordained minister by the church that cared for me through that time, ironic, you know, they gifted me in that way. They gave me a gift in that way to notice and to take note of the calling on my life and say that, yeah, you don't meet the qualifications, but you do meet the qualifications. You have been married once before, but we see that mercy and grace and God has built you up and made you into the person that he wanted you to be. So I'm grateful for that. I mean, yeah, I was the recipient of some good things that happened there. And for me, when I take a real different view about people in the church now that are divorced, I think it's an issue that we care for them. And don't mistake caring for condoning, but that we care for them, that we genuinely put our arm around them and put aside things to care for someone who is hurting, because I believe that's what Jesus would have done. I believe that's what he exhibits in Scripture. You know, the adulterous woman at the well, what did he do? Picked her up and said, who is here around you? Who's accusing you? I don't seem to think that there's anybody standing here anymore. And he treats her as a person, not as a category. And I think as a church, that's our responsibility, to treat people genuinely, to treat people with love and care, and at least put them in a position to make the best decision that they can about their lives and about their recommitment and covenant with the Lord.
I think when the church begins to address these issues of caretaking for those broken and bruised by divorce situations, by failed marriages, I think immediately what comes into our minds at this is, like you said, are we thus condoning? Are we going soft on the authority of Jesus? Are we putting too many caveats on his words? And I think if we're going to take that stance to say it is our place and our role to uphold the words of Jesus, never mind that Paul himself just throws gaping caveats into Jesus' statement by, oh, if it's a mixed marriage, what? And how many Christian marriages were there that were purely Christian marriages in those days? Then it is inconsequential, that it really doesn't matter that the person is not committing adultery if they go and get married. If their non-believer spouse divorces them for another person, that somehow now they are not adulterers, and directly negates Jesus' words. Because Jesus' words, we would say, are transcendent. But even aside from that, if there is a role for us to say we will uphold and hold as a binding protocol these words of Christ, I think we also have to consider that it was Christ who said to the church, what you bind on earth is bound in heaven. What you loose on earth is loosed in heaven, and whose sins you forgive are forgiven. And I think the church really needs to take those words of Christ to heart as much as Christ's words on the binding protocols of marriage, and to say, is it or is it not our job then to loose people from their sins? As the representatives of Christ on earth, to say, we as the church then, considering that this marriage has failed, we now free you in the name of Christ from your obligations and vows. Just like Paul many times, on behalf of Christ, and then he makes some statement that is partly the church's role to fulfill the words of Christ and to uphold them, saying, we have Christ's power of attorney, and we can then free you from this adulterous situation. Let's get you in a right one. If Christ said you're committing adultery, now we, having the authority of Christ, since he has conferred it upon us, we now then release you in the name of Christ from those vows of your original statement, and we will now seek to see you made whole. And that is the work of the church in baptizing, in communion, in all of these things, that we stand to say, on behalf of Christ, we forgive you. On behalf of Christ, we bring the gospel to you, and at some point we say, you know what? The Lord says to you, you are forgiven. Go on. Whether it's about living as a drug addict your whole life, whether it's about stealing, whether it's about anger, whatever, that we stand to say, in the name of Christ, be forgiven. And that that's our role. And somehow to reserve that in particular cases seems to be a pretty powerful violation of the commission that the church has received from Christ to go out with good news to the persons in distress. And I think that's something that we have to seriously consider, is the amount of authority that Christ in his words has conferred and commissioned the church with. If we're truly to honor the words of Christ, then we need to honor his commissioning of us too. And if we are to play havoc with the commission, then why do we seek to uphold the Sermon on the Mount and those caveats? Because Christ's words are Christ's words.
Yeah, we live in an interesting and difficult tension as a church, in that we seek to pursue the ideal. We want very much to experience a full and abundant life, and we know that that comes in following Christ. So we want to have good marriages. We want to have good morals. We want to live in obedience. And we know that's good and best. But when we use those desires for what is good and best as a club with which to beat on those who have failed, then we as a church have failed.
Precisely, because the command, the reader of Scripture has to acknowledge that the command is not to someone else, but that when Christ commands, do not marry or do not divorce for someone, he's talking to the person reading. Not regarding someone else, but regarding the person hearing. When we begin to utilize these laws as leverages, then, and say somehow the command about divorce and lust and adultery is a command to everyone else, which I utilize to assess them, now we're going against Christ's prohibition against judgment, for which he says, you know, he'll send you into hell, you know. So we're dealing in a very precipitous kind of territory here, trying to make the words of Christ rigid and applying to others. If we do so, we are going to end up in the same place.
I think in the time we have remaining, I want to turn the show a little bit over to Paul. I don't think anyone here in this room denies the fact that divorce is, by and large, a train wreck. It is devastating to the people involved and to those around them. What I'd like for us to focus on for the rest of the show is, in your experience, what are some key things that you bring into a counseling session before a marriage takes place? We've kind of touched on what to do after the accident happens. Let's talk a little bit more about how to put up signposts to prevent the car going over the edge of the cliff.
As counselors and as a church, I think there are two essential sides of the issue. One is prevention and one is reparation. And the preventative side, I think, is both as a counselor myself and in speaking for what the church can do, there are some good preventative measures that can take place. And I'm excited by some of the movements that are taking place in churches by means of Mike McManus is working on something called community marriage policies that are sweeping the nation. And some of the basic tenets of a community marriage policy is the churches in the area getting together and saying, we really want to stand behind marriages and do whatever we can to help make stronger marriages. And one of the issues that most community marriage policies do incorporate is mandatory counseling prior to marriage. There are various counseling approaches that can be taken, but another issue that often gets incorporated into a community marriage policy is assessment. Speaking from the counseling side, there are numerous assessment measures that are that have been developed over the past decade that really have just moved forward in leaps and bounds. We can now with something called the PREPARE, which is an inventory, and can predict with up to about 80% accuracy with couples that take this measure whether the couple will end up in, say, 5 years happily married, married and unhappy, or divorced. I mean, that's astounding that we can do that. I say that to point out that there are some assessment measures that can be taken and used with a couple to give them a heads up. What are the areas of concern for the relationship? What areas are they going to need to work on? And what areas to really celebrate as a couple that, wow, these are some strengths to the marriage. So in the terms of assessment, that's something that can be done. And a church can stand behind that, both in the terms of counseling and assessment, and say, we really want to help couples to have stronger marriages. So this is something we're going to advocate for. So that's something on the edge of prevention. I think something else that needs to happen within the church and can happen within counseling also is that once difficulties have begun to arise, that a church can stand behind couples by putting together support groups for couples to help couples that are going through difficult areas and difficult times to find the support they needed, because oftentimes the support within the marriage dissolves at that point. And I think having another area of support that a couple can go to is very important in being able to provide the resources to get the couple back on the right track. I'd like to jump a little bit over to the reparation side of things in this, for the sake of time. I'd like to piggyback a little bit on what Eric said and what Adam has said here about what was beneficial and really a blessing to Eric in this process. I think it speaks to what a church can do in the reparation process. One of the things that I have seen really profound in the couples that I've worked with that have gone through divorce is issues of shame and of guilt and of how am I going to be perceived now by my church and by others. And if for a church to be able to come alongside somebody who's gone through this and say, we are here for you, and we love you, and we still see you as a child of God. And yes, you're fallen, but so aren't we all. And to come along and support an individual, I think, speaks volumes of the work of Christ. And that is what will draw people to Christ. That is speaking Christ's love to the people. And that, not ironically, is the work that I would do with a couple in counseling or an individual in counseling, is to begin to provide an atmosphere where they can talk through some of these issues and talk through some of the hurt and the shame and the guilt, and to begin to work through that in a loving environment that oftentimes dissolves with the marriage. And I'm excited to see that that Adam, in your church, that is a safe place. And I'm excited to see that many other churches are beginning to adopt a stance like this, and saying, you know, we really want to love people. And yes, there is a legality issue, or there is the issue of how are we going to respond to this, but saying, you know, that's not as important as loving people. I think the one other issue that oftentimes does need to be worked out in a counseling situation or in some type of a situation where you have a third person that can provide some type of an objective lens on the situation is invariably when a divorce happens, there is a fallenness that is in the mix. I think you mentioned, Eric, about how the difficulty of wanting to look and say, well, this is the other person and this is the other person. And I really appreciated your humbleness and openness and looking and say, you know, I also am part of this. It is a two-person covenant. And I think that there needs to be a piece in this to want to look at how have I contributed to this fallenness as part of the reparation process prior to stepping back into new relationships, regardless of the hurt and loss and fallenness that the other person may have contributed to this broken covenant. As part of a covenant, there is a brokenness that we all in that type of a relationship contribute to. And I speak personally, and I'm not perfect in my marriage either, and I would hesitate to say that anybody is. And so there's a fallenness that we can all look at and taking hold of. How can we be more faithful? How can we be more loving? How can we contribute in a more godly, more loving way in the relationship to heal the brokenness that may have contributed to the fallenness or to the broken covenant?
I can't help but think of the whole Christ event, you know, his life, his ministry, his death, his resurrection, and how this is uniquely what makes us Christians. And when you talk about this, Paul, I hear all the different aspects of the Christ event. Yes, it would have been great had we not fallen in the garden. Yes, it would have been fantastic if ancient Israel had not violated the covenants with God. Yes, we as Christians, it would be awesome if we don't violate our covenants of commitment that we make when we become Christians, at our baptisms, repeatedly at our communions. And yet, somehow in the middle of this, there is the grace of Christ, which continually says, I will renew, I will resurrect. And I think in the same way that without condoning the crucifixion as a righteous act or something that was proper, we embrace it and we come to Christ and we say, yes, somehow that was me that got you on that cross. Somehow this was something that was heinously unjust, totally against what God would want, and yet somehow fulfilled God's love. And we embrace that and we look for the resurrection. There is this mixed bag there where it is not something that should exist in a pristine world. It is not the way God intended to be loved, you know? But even in the middle of the violation of that covenant love with God, he says, hey, I'm bigger than that. I'll resurrect me. I'll resurrect you. I'll forgive you. Even though I said, if you deny me, I'll deny you. I'm changing my mind. And I'm not going to deny you because you denied me. Instead, I'm going to heal you, give you authority, and send you on your way with the Holy Spirit. And I think we, as Christians, have the unique place, and the church has the unique place in this world to say, without saying divorce is right, we support marriage 100%, but we have what it takes to see this redeemed, and no other place on this earth can see it redeemed like we can see it redeemed. Come to Christ. Let's be made whole.
And that about wraps it up for this conversation here for Interface. We've been talking over the last couple of shows about divorce. I'd like to thank Adam, Paul Sullivan, and Eric for being so open and candid with us today. We'd like to thank Bullwhip Studios, and I'd like to thank you for listening.